Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me for my Manifesting with the Devas program. I'm so happy you all showed up. I feel so supported. Thank you all so very much. And let's get started with what are Devas. And first of all, can someone tell me, can you hear me okay? I'm new at these controls. Can someone type in to the Q&A whether I'm not on mute or I'm, you know, that I'm doing everything right? Okay. Deb, can you hear me?
Yep.
Great, thank you. New at the controls, right? Okay, thank you. So, what are Devas? And Devas have been part of our existence for a very long time, and you can see them in art. You can hear about them in folk tales, and you can read about them in ancient texts all over the world. And these accounts don't describe them all in exactly the same way, but they all believed that devas were real and an integral part of their lives. So let's start with a definition of what devas are, and then the ways the different cultures understood what devas to be. In Sanskrit, first of all, the word deva means a being of brilliant light or a shining one, and it's used to indicate a non-physical being. So devas in Hinduism can loosely be described as any benevolent supernatural being. They're the maintainers of the realms. And some devas represent the forces of nature, and some represent moral values. And nature devas are responsible for the elements or objects like fire and air and rain and trees. And higher devas control much more intricate tasks governing the function of the cosmos and the evolution of creation. In the two-soul concept of the United States indigenous mound builders, the mound builders believed that upon death, the physical body, two souls were released. The first soul continued to be intact and live on, and this was the identifiable personality that was self-aware. And the life soul, which was the physical aspect that animated the body, the unconscious, the mindless force, got left behind to haunt and be dangerous to the living. The life soul was considered to be the deva soul. The free soul was considered to be the human soul. In the shamanic tradition, the world's divided into three levels, the upper, lower, and middle worlds. And each level contains within it a certain vibrational quality that holds specific wisdom and healing. And the middle world is our reality as we know it. It's our day-to-day lives, the residing place of our physical bodies. It's our normal waking consciousness. And the shaman journeys through the other two worlds to gather information and medicines that are specific for that person that they're working with. The upper world is what some call the heavens, and this is the home of the star nations, our celestial or spirit guides, the angels and archetypes and the planetary beings. The upper world is considered to be our superconsciousness or our higher self, that aspect not trapped in time and space. And the lower world is a place where nature spirits reside, and it's where the shaman communes with the essence of a plant or mineral or animal. It could even be a mountain or a lake or just any aspect of nature. And it provides information into nature and the invisible web of intercommunications that it contains. It's often a place where one's power animal resides, as well as plant totems. The lower world is also considered to be our unconscious or subconscious self. A more modern perspective of what devas are was given to us by Rupert Sheldrake, who coined the term morphogenetic field, the M field. And it's a universal field of intelligence and consciousness and memory that unifies everything. Everything that has a form has an M field or a deva. This includes ideas, cultures, a drop of water, and your body. If it has a name and it has a form, it has an M field that holds that information. That is the devic consciousness. The M field is encoded with a blueprint, and this is why birds know to fly south for the winter, or why trees reach up to the sky for the sun, and what produces leaves. In the ancient spiritual texts, according to some of the ascended masters, Source sends down sparks of life force or spirit into matter. And spirit is considered to be divine father, divine mother, is the intelligence within the substance or the matter. And the field created by spirit penetrating matter is the soul or consciousness. It's the interaction. And some aspects of soul are more conscious than others. In the animal and the human kingdoms, the deva partially withdraws to allow consciousness to develop independence. As humans, our consciousness is already individualized, meaning we can step back and observe ourselves, observing ourselves. You know. But human monads are of solar origin, but using a devic form. The higher animals are becoming individualized, but most consciousness on the planet is group consciousness. Devas are group conscious. Angels act from and are strictly connected with divine will, and they're very powerful in what they do. And the lesser evolved devas are intimately connected to the soul of the earth, her spiritual heart. The higher devas are nature spirits of the highest order, the mind of nature. In the plant kingdom, the deva is the consciousness of the plant. Devas are the intelligences within nature which guide and pattern the natural creative evolution of life. So you see, different cultures, past and present, understood the beings of the devic kingdom to be spirit beings, just as humans are, and also part of God's plan. Devic beings are the intelligences behind the world of life and form, the regulators and maintainers of our physical world. And within this role, they can draw in and direct energy straight from God Goddess and are capable of alchemy. They can transmute prana or life force energy into usable substances to maintain the life of whatever they're working on. Devic beings can be little tiny electron-sized builders with an earth, air, fire, water nature, or they can be grouped to maintain a large area like a forest, or they can even be of a cosmic size like a planet. And Mother Earth is a planetary being with consciousness, creative intelligence, love, vitality. Planetary beings are universal spirits. The planet Earth is devic, and all life it supports is also devic. The higher managing devas hold, or the higher managing devas are also called spirits of the land or spirits of the place. I call them managing devas because they manage, and they manage more than land or space. They manage ideas and cultures and so forth. So I call them managing devas. But the managing devas hold the idea and the plan in mind, while the elements build the structures. The elementals are the energies, the elements, and the invisible workers within nature, and when combined together, form the growth and the maintenance of life on Earth. And some are of lesser ranks of unconscious building devas and guided only by vibration and sound. And the Devic kingdom makes up the manifesting world. The group of divine spirits who guide the Devic kingdom are the angels of divine presence. The Eastern teachings call these angels devas, but we in the West call them angels. From within the group of divine spirits, there's a group of entities that have been gathered from the ranks of the most advanced devas who are serving as guardian angels for humanity. Everyone has a guardian angel to stand watch night and day. And the term deva is usually reserved for the greater or larger intelligences or angels. The intermediary spirits are called spirits of a place, like I said, or spirits of a land. The lesser spirits are simply called elementals or nature spirits. So traditional folklores see the elementals as small fairies, while other folklore see the fairies as nature spirits, you know, that sort of thing. What devas actually look like depends on the person looking. We give them form with our creative imagination. They are real, but how we see them depends on how our psyche receives the subtle sense of their presence. We need to trust our inner senses, as communication with them is very subtle. And most people are unconscious of the constant contact we have with Devic beings in our everyday life. Everything that has a form is made up of the vital substances of the many lesser ranks of devas. And these are held together by a higher ranking deva providing the coherence of the object's form. The higher ranking deva holds all of the nature spirits and the elementals together and directs them. So everything has its own controlling devic life. Be it a ruby, a drop of water, an owl, a rose, a human being. And each deva of nature is a spirit being with consciousness and intelligence. So let me kind of compare, contrast them a little bit, because it helps to fill in the spaces where there's question marks, okay? So nature spirits are related to the plant world. They are the caretakers of nature on our planet. But this is only part of the role. Nature spirits function as the ecosystem, the body, the soul, and spirit of the plant. The planet Earth is Devic, and all life it supports is also Devic, and essential part of the planet. On the other hand, humans are of solar origin rather than of planetary origin. And I'm talking about the human monad, that spark of God that's anchored in our hearts. So all of life on Earth, which is part of Earth and is affected by whatever affects Earth, is essentially Devic, including the human body. And in regard to the human body, remember I mentioned that Source sent down sparks of itself into matter. Well, the field created by this union is the human consciousness. It's a field. And we are of God, that God spark. We are Devic, you know, and the union of the two creates consciousness. Our particular formula of how much God spark versus, versus the Devic creates our specific human consciousness versus an animal consciousness. You know, there's like formulas, you know, how much of this and how much of that. But the domesticated animals who develop a close relationship with humans and become dependent on humans for their existence, rather than on the planet, are in preparation for their own individualization. And, you know, we're talking about pets and horses and elephants and those that just are in contact more and depend upon human intervention for feeding and for walking and for, you know, baths and whatever else happens. Those, our particular position in this whole system is we're caretakers to the animal kingdom. We're the stewards of the animal kingdom. And as we move up in consciousness, as we move up to become conscious souls, our higher selves, we pull that which is below us in consciousness up. And they fill that position that we were in. So they're becoming, the animal kingdom is becoming individualized as we move up to be a more conscious or spiritual human. And as I already mentioned, the plant kingdom, the deva, is the embodiment of the consciousness of the plant. So they'll be, the plant kingdom will move up kind of behind the animal kingdom. It's like a chain, a link on a chain, all these links on a chain. As one moves up, we all pull the next one up with us. So humans have the ability to work in the higher dimensions, and with this, we have access to individuality or the separate archetypical soul. And animals and the lesser evolved beings don't have that connection with the higher levels yet. And therefore, they are connected to a common or a group soul. And one of the differences between humans and devas is that humans are multifaceted beings, and our evolutionary path is moving away from the lower mental group mind toward the diversity of numerous experiences in order to refine the quality of our consciousness towards our role as spiritual beings, creating in love and wisdom. Now, the devic evolutionary path is moving towards expressing a singular specialization in order to perfect their form. In the evolutionary process, every evolving creature is guided from a level above its normal awareness by its higher self or the equivalent to its higher self. The angelic devas function on the etheric plane through connections to other devic beings and in cooperation with people who are working through their heart centers. The etheric plane is their equivalent level of physical reality, and I'm talking about angels. It's the equivalent of their physical reality. This is the lowest they can function on their own. In the 3D world, when they work directly with elementals, it's without retaining their angelic forms because they come farther down into the more physical. The human and the devic kingdoms are parallel lifelines in parallel dimensions. And the human kingdom is innately love, the force which produces coherency. The devic kingdom is innately intelligence, the force which produces activity. Divine will, the force that is balancing the equilibrium of electrical phenomena in the world, plays equally upon and through both evolutions. But the human kingdom, it demonstrates as self-consciousness, and in the devic kingdom as constructive vibration. The human and devic kingdoms are two separate kingdoms that interact, and our kingdoms interact like strands of DNA. And when in unity, our solar and planetary relationships spirals its way through life, and with our higher self in control of the lower self or personality, the higher self is able to direct the lesser devas in our body, our physical body's emotions and lower mind. So there are greater angelic devas and there are lesser elemental devas, and our bodies are made up of both. Through the causative activity of the self-conscious human monad acting through its soul, the receptive deva substance is influenced and built and energized. The two, human and deva, together form a unity. And through the electric fire, spiritual impulse or purpose influences the atomic aspect of the devic substance. And through the solar fire or consciousness, there's a coherency in the construction by the form building groups. And through the dual force of fire by friction, the active heat of intelligent substance energizes and animates matter itself. The human and deva evolutions interact in the etheric, emotional, and mental fields, but unity occurs in the spiritual dimension. And when this happens, when the human and the deva consciousnesses interact in the spiritual dimensions, there's unity. The magician is born. And what a way to live, right? So the human and the deva kingdoms have history together. A very long time ago, humanity and the deva kingdom worked closely together. Humanity was the masculine, or what would be the causative polarity, and the devas were the feminine, or the more receptive polarity of the relationship. And humanity used devas and the elemental forces for personal gratification and weapons. And this is mentioned in the Hindu text Ramayana. Ramayana. The spiritual hierarchy of the planet stepped in and removed devas from humanity's control. And eventually humanity forgot about the devas. And all that remained were myths and stories, like the Persian story of Aladdin and his lamp. And it speaks about the hidden secret clues to humanity's magical powers of co-creation when united with the devas. And the British story, The Lady of the Lake, and the Arthurian legends, where the Celtic goddess or water nymph created or crafted a magical sword for King Arthur to use to unite the people of the land. The Norse myths about the elves and the dwarves with their creativity and magic. The Celtic myths about the ancient wise ones, the Shi. And the little people or fairies, the leprechauns and the like, with their magical abilities and shenanigans. Some more modern stories are Disney's Tinkerbell, Little Mermaid, Cinderella with her fairy godmother, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. But aside from the myths and the stories, were still a few groups that remembered how to respectfully work with devas. Those would be the Aboriginal and the indigenous cultures. You know, the shaman, the wise men, the Wiccan, the Druids, magicians and alchemists. And recently, the spiritual hierarchy agreed to bring devas and humans back together in a partnership, but this time, the relationship is more as equal partners. And the devas are still the builders. They're receptive to human thought forms and blueprints. And this might be a good place to mention, don't use your will to usurp someone else's will. Instead, send them love to give them another option. And that's come up a few times in sessions. So you don't want to misuse this power, This isn't to change someone's mind. This is as constructive building of what you want, okay, from your heart. But the building devas are close to the earth, so the most efficient way to work with them is, of course, to be grounded and speak from your heart and use the golden grid or the consciousness grid. In the book, A Treatise on White Magic, Ascended Master Dwal Kool, who was working with Ellis Bailey, talks about the creative process or the steps of manifestation. And simply put, the creation starts as a movement of spirit. It coalesces as a thought form, and it's energized by desire. Then the devas gild it, and the creation manifests in physical form. Devas are the life force of the form. And devas have a hierarchy within their kingdom. The hierarchy of the devas, it's vast, and I have been talking about it a little already. There are the lesser unconscious builders who are guided only by vibration and sound to the much more great angels. The little builders progress along, and as they gain experience, the quality of their work improves, and they get promoted similar to humans, you know, the human hierarchy of workers. And everything that has a form, everything the little builders build is made up of vital substance. And these substances are held together by a higher ranking deva or an angel. An example would be elementals that make up a tree, soil, and a drop of water. And then there are the devas that make up a forest or a lake or a greater area, like Yosemite Park or the Grand Canyon. And the more universal or cosmic devas or angels hold together planets and suns. The angelic kingdom, and I'm going to include angels and the managing devas, they direct and guide the devic kingdom, meaning the nature spirits and the elementals. The greater devas are not as easily impressed by humanity as the elementals are. The greater devas can't be controlled by human thought or will. They must be approached with an attitude of humility and selflessness and gratitude. The devas of an area are the guardian spirit of the area. They govern the energies of that area, and these devas have their own unique field of intelligence and consciousness and memory. Memory is easily stored in crystalline structures within the land. You know, the natural presence and the power and the personality of a place are due to the deva. Just think about the feel of different cities that you visited. New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Atlanta don't all have the same feel. The devas are different, and each one has their own feel to it. So under the guidance of the greater devas or the lesser devas, and each of the greater devas is a group soul and has a blueprint which guides that specific place in growth and evolution for all of the spirits and the energies in the area. In the involutionary-evolutionary process, the forces of involution and evolution are two different phases, and the devic kingdom range consists of both phases. In the involutionary phase, the elementals do most of the work. The lower ranks of devas or the elementals are the most unconscious, and they work blindly as they're guided by the builders or the managing devas, building the many forms necessitated by the evolving life of the area or whatever it's working on. The work is constructive and cohesive. It gradually flows together like harmony out of discord or beauty out of chaos. And managing devas are on the evolutionary path, progressing their way upward from the very unconscious to the fully conscious, working in graded ranks, all moving upward in ordered beauty. And remember that you can control the elemental forces with your intention or will, but you must cooperate with the higher ranking devas. And working with the elementals, which are on the evolutionary path, always work from your heart center. Raise your vibration, clear your energetic field, and in general, protect yourself by grounding to the earth and aligning with your higher self. In working with managing devas, use the wisdom or the love aspect. Through love, you reach them. The managing devas are good at this, and it's better if you ask for their cooperation. As a rule, devas are handled in groups and not as individuals until you contact the devas of a very high order, like the angels and the higher ranking devas, the higher managing devas. Like a spirit of a land. In that case, it would be like Yosemite Park, you know, like the bigger ranking devas. But angels are directly connected to divine will, and angels use very refined matter for their bodies, which our minds interpret as light bodies. And there's a continual play of patterns of energy throughout their body and their aura. And these patterns of lines of force and vortices, they give the appearance of crown, you know, like a crown or a halo or the wings. You know, their bodies and their auras appear to change shape and color with the activity of their thoughts and their feelings and their spiritual work. And when they speak to us, they use a system of colors and symbols and vibration. They're coming from angels, usually work in spiritual matter. And so although you may hear them with words, they usually, you know, they'll send the concepts of love, how they feel love, or how they understand the problem you're working on from a spiritual aspect. Now, fairies and nature spirits live closely to our world, but they're not really part of it. In the 3D world, we have bodies made up of bones and muscles and nerves and blood, and consisting of matter ranging in refinement to solids, liquids, and gases, and ethers, and so forth. The fairies live in the more refined matter of the ethers, and their essence is made up of vital matter, and vital matter is etheric matter, and they're also fairies are also emotional matter. The emotional energy coursing through them dictates their movement and their desire. And when they feel into an emotion, their body responds in some way to that emotion. And they don't perceive through special organs like we do. They get sensations through their whole body. Their whole body is an organism. So they feel it through their whole body, or they perceive through their whole body. So when fairies establish relationships with other fairies and humans and the natural environment, they adapt their vibration to the vibration of the being they're relating to. So they match. You know, when we match our heartbeat to the pulse of the universe, they are matching themselves to the being that they're relating to. So if you work with a fairy, they try and match what it is you're feeling and your, you know, what you're putting out, right? And I believe this is done, their matching of vibration, this is done with the rhythm of their heartbeat And they don't really have a heart per se, they have a center. So it would be the rhythm of what can be construed as their heartbeat. They match their heartbeat to unify with what they're relating to. So angels and managing devas have chakras, but a more defined type of chakra, but fairies have more of just a center. It isn't as defined as a chakra. So through what heart center they have, they match that vibration. To give a contrast, from the human point of view, we concern ourselves with the beauty of a form of something. Let's say a tree or a flower, you know, we just relate to its beauty. And we look at the size and we look at the shape and the color and even the usefulness of what that tree or that plant can do for us. It's in respect to ourselves that we're looking at that beauty. Whereas fairies concern themselves with just the life essence, the energy flowing around and through the tree or the plant, and they address the spirit and the vital energy of the tree. And in fact, it's a living, breathing personality to them. You know, those of us on this call understand that trees are more than just a thing or an object now. And many of us go out and we'll touch the tree and commune with the tree. And that's more of what fairies do. They match the vibration of what they're relating to. And that's how they know what that tree needs. By, you know, matching their vibration to it, they're able to help adjust what that tree needs. Now, elementals are the invisible workers within nature. The greater devas hold the blueprint and direct the elementals to do the actual work. The greater devas hold the elementals together in a group. And their energy is so subtle, the elementals. So when we look at them, we often have to use our creative imagination, but we have to do that pretty much to all devas anyway. But so what they look like depends on the person looking. And elementals, they're assigned specific tasks like guiding water currents and streams and oceans, or directing winds and storms and clouds, the movement of the systems, the high and low pressure systems, that sort of thing. And they help plants grow. And there's even little tiny forms that help germinate seeds. So every aspect of life is covered. And elementals are guided by the more evolved devas, but the more conscious elementals have a little bit of freedom to be creative, just like humans, and they learn by experience and playing and communication. And elementals are influenced by the quality of thoughts and emotions of the place they inhabit. So they're influenced by the people who inhabit an area. The angels or greater devas direct them by mind and intention and emotion, as do humans, but people who can concentrate their powers of mind and heart in a definite direction can evoke some influence in the pattern that the elementals are creating. And this, you know, this takes practice and this takes foreknowledge, you know, just understanding that you come from the heart and, you know, and you direct love and so forth to the plant and it thrives, or a tree, or, you know, that sort of thing. So this influence, an example might be to impress the deva of a kitchen for healthy eating, perhaps, something like that too. And the fact that they can be contacted on the emotional plane is no guarantee that they're on the evolutionary path. It could be still on the involutionary path, which means they're less conscious of the repercussions of what happens. They need the managing David. It's like a three-year-old, you know. They need the managing David to guide them. So when engaging the elementals, it's best done through the greater or managing Deva of an area. So connecting and communicating or establishing a relationship with angels and Devas and nature spirits and elementals, they're already a part of our earthly experience, whether we reach out and cooperate with them or not. They're there. We may not be able to see them with our physical eyes, but they are there waiting for us to remember that they are there. And they're willing to reestablish our symbiotic relationship in a balanced and co-creative way. It's inherently part of God's plan for us to have a manifesting partnership with Him. Your body is already a Deva. It isn't a stretch to more fully invite Devas into your life in a conscious way for a more enriching relationship. Everyone can benefit by establishing a relationship with the David Kingdom and by understanding how to work with them. Nature spirits work in cooperation with elementals to get a better yield in the garden with flowers or fruits and vegetables, but they'll help with whatever you ask them to do if it's within their expertise. So remember that they're little alchemists and can transmute energy from one form or phase to another. And angels can assist you with your problems by directing the builders to help in healing your body. They may even whisper things in your ears to bring you knowledge. They know how the natural world works and can help you with your magical or spiritual progress. You're just asking for help. Devas can help you with any of your manifesting needs. Invite them to help you find a job, a home, a car. If you throw enough stuff at a wall, eventually the wall will fill with color. But wouldn't it be better if you could have the detail, the nuance, the depth that consciously creating your soul's desire would produce? I mean, to have more control over it and get exactly what you want. Now, I'd like to talk a little about what do devas look like. We know they're invisible to the physical eye, but what do they look like to the inner eye? Clairvoyant Jeffrey Hodson, and I mentioned this in the interview with Ian, Jeffrey is spelt with a G, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, Hodson, H-O-D-S-O-N. He published a series of books on devas and his observations as a clairvoyant of what fairies, brownies, elves, mannequins, spriggans, leprechauns, goblins, and dwarves, and pixies, what they look like to him. Now, he published a series of books, and I think these books were in the, I'm going to say 1920s and 30s. These are old books, and I don't know how easily you can get a hold of them. But in his book, Kingdom of the Gods, he has pictures of devas in there. And it's been a while since I looked in that book, but I remember them being like the deva of a mountain or the deva of a tree. And, you know, even I think he had nature spirits in there as well. I'm not sure. Another one, Marco Pogadnik, and I'm probably mispronouncing that. So it's P-O-G-A-C-N-I-C, Marco, M-A-R-K-O. He developed a method of earth healing similar to acupuncture by using stone pillars. He observed fawns in a healthy tree as spiraling energy which encircled the branches and also the roots deep down in the earth. Another one, Michelle Wright, who developed Paralandra, which is a co-creative gardening research center, and I think that's in Virginia, I'm not sure. And she claims that the nature spirit's form is seen only with the human mind's eye when wanting to communicate. And so they're used as a communication bridge in the form of, say, like an elf, not an elf with an independent life of its own. She did not believe that elves existed per se as a fairy type of thing, but that it was just an energy used as a bridge to communicate with nature. Now, Disney featured them in many movies, and I'm wondering if he saw them as cartoon characters, like sometimes I see my M&M guys. But most clairvoyants say that devas and nature spirits often appear in the form that the observer expects to see them. And since fairies usually align themselves with one of the forces of nature or elemental energies, they take on the appearance of the element that they work with, like a tree or a fire, you know, like a fire deva. The fairies that work closely with the soul of the earth take on a luminescent, opalescent type of, you know, appearance. It grows and diminishes according to the circumstances or the mood. So it would pulse, perhaps, when the emotions are high and that sort of thing. But fairies are classified as hive beings, and they can be seen huddling or traveling together, like in a hive. And since they're close in consciousness to one another, they often act as one. And solitary fairies are loners, and they're more attached to a specific geographical area, like a garden, a park, or a household, directing the elementals to the needed tasks. And I'm thinking that the solitary fairies would be moving into the position of managing devas if they're acting in a solitary way and directing elementals and so forth. But you still may see them, say, as a gnome, perhaps, in your garden. You might see it, the energy pattern, as, say, like a gnome, if it's a more solitary fairy. And when I'm looking to paint devic beings, which I've tried a few times, I see them mostly as energy patterns. And when I'm looking to communicate with them for personal client information, they show themselves as sparks of light, like fireflies, and sometimes as my little M&M guys wearing shoes and gloves. So whether they're little beings or spiraling energy or communication bridges, devas are real and can be communicated with. And it's easy to connect with them. Fairies live in the etheric realm, in the emotional fields. And the refinement of the ether they live in directly correlates to where they are in their evolutionary process. And since fairies have refined bodies and are not confined to solid shapes, they're capable of shape-shifting. All of them are. They work with our emotions and creative imaginations to suggest appearances to us. And you might see energy patterns out of the corners of your eyes and movements in water or shapes in clouds that suggest their communication with you or to you. And the easiest time to make contact with fairies is at liminal times of the day, like sunrise and sunset, sometimes noon and midnight. But I think with sunrise and sunset, things aren't so intense. They aren't intensely light or they aren't intensely dark, right? So it's just an easier way, perhaps, of seeing them or whatever you're doing with them. So you can go to liminal places like the sea or lake shores, you know, in between here and there, land and sea, the outskirts of sacred or tribal lands, ley lines. Forest and big state parks are also a good place to make contact with fairies if that's where you're going. Although they're all around. I mean, they're nature. But it's so rich. They are so rich in the big forests and the state parks that perhaps you'd have a better chance of seeing them. There's so many of them. It's thick with them. So calling upon fairies isn't any different than calling upon your guides, angels, higher self, or even source. You know, you can call on fairies of a particular element or just call on them in general. It's helpful to know the nature of what you want or how they can assist you, and therefore you can call on the fairy or the nature spirit of a particular element. If you're just not sure, just call on them in general. When calling on the fairies, some hints to the structure of their input are: undines or water fairies are often work with emotions, and this could be to help you clean some emotional blocks, or, you know, cleanse out some emotional blocks or lower level emotions. Specifically, call on mermaids for the more deep emotions that you're trying to work with, those that are a little bit harder to, you know, move or transmute. Let's see, salamanders are fire fairies, and they can help you clear blocks in general, just specifically clearing away old forms to make way for new, especially if it's a creative project. Gnomes or earth fairies can help you ground and be present in the moment, specifically if it involves the beauty of nature or life on earth. You know, that's their specialty. Sylphs or air fairies, they can help you with the breath of life. They can also help you open your higher mind to abstract thoughts and symbols and opening your imagination. But just be responsible for what you invite through. Would it be wise to invite a leprechaun to watch your old coins? You know, sometimes they're mischievous, and sometimes they just don't know better. Some are innocent, like a 3-year-old giving a tea party with your best china and crystal. So it's important to make sure also that you're in gratitude for the fairy's intervention, and you can thank them. You can leave offerings like a plate of natural fruit or vegetables outside in your garden or by your favorite tree after sunset or before sunrise. Just make it a clean and uncluttered area and leave nutritious stuff. They don't eat the food, they absorb its essence. And they like milk, cream, butter. I don't know, that might attract ants though, which are devas in themselves too, but they're a little pesky. So I think also just noticing their beauty, just paying attention to what they're doing, the nature spirits absolutely love it when you pay attention to what they're doing. And if you continue to do it on a consistent basis, you're opening up a relationship with them when you do that. But offerings of song and music, you know, music with an acoustical instrument are welcoming to the fairies to give voice to the spirits of the land surrounding you. It gives them a voice when you do that. You know, if you're coming from a place of love, right? And they love to dance, and they love it when you dance with them, you know. So in general, be open to their magic and their, and mind your manners and be honest and polite and honorable in all your dealings with them. And they will bless you with beautiful flowers or, you know, whatever it is their expertise is. And folklore says, poison, iron is poisonous to them. Now, iron has its own Davis too, so I'm not so sure. It's kind of fun to get into all of this fairy folklore stuff, and that's what they say. Iron can banish unfriendly fairies if you're having trouble with the mischievous ones, and the bronze, copper, and silver heal them. But once again, I don't know. Iron has Davis too, so I don't know. Anyway, so, you know, if you'd like to entice a fairy friend into your garden, plant some plants and flowers like tulips and ferns and so, you know, just if you're looking to invite them in, you got to plant something. And they like to play, so use bright colors and scents and attract wildlife to your area too, like hang bird feeders. And they like little colored Christmas tree lights in your garden. So if you have a spot that you can hang some Christmas tree, you know, the little ones. And you could build a fairy house using twigs and leaves and stones. Or you can even refurbish an old birdhouse. And it's kind of fun to put in your garden, too. And you can decorate it with rocks and feathers and stuff. And my husband uses fence art to entice them. He works with wood a lot, and the negative shapes he cuts out of the wood, he puts up on the fence for fence art, and he does this with intention. So, you know, and he's careful to thank them, and he gets lucky lengths all the time. He rarely ever wastes any wood; it's all used up. So, if you'd like to attract a house fairy, and they're called Dobby or Dobbins, and also Brownies, to bless your house, start with a clean house, no clutter or mess, and put out offerings, of course, to attract them. And just remember to use natural stuff. I think it would be insulting if you tried to put out processed food. And then sensing the nature spirits, connecting with fairies can be as easy as opening your heart and mind to communication during meditation or just tuning in. And remember that angels are in the spiritual matter. The spirit of a place is more of a mental, in your mental field. Nature spirits are more in your emotional field, and elementals are in the etheric field. Now, nature spirits can go in the emotional and the etheric. Managing Davis or the spirits of a place can go all three, and angels can go all of them, you know, as well. Open your mind and your heart during meditation, and then, since most nature spirits live in the earth's etheric field and above, you have to ground yourself to the earth in order to communicate with them. And after grounding, you start with a heart connection from a place of love. And then you have to set an intention to see or feel or hear or sense them. Their bodies are made up of matter of the etheric plane, and that's specific to their nature, earth, air, fire, and water. And they'll work in their specific subtle substance to step down or transform energies into usable physical matter. So it's easiest to locate them near an area specific to their nature, for, you know, like a garden, the lake, the sky, a fireplace, you know, that sort of thing. And you may sense them close to you by the feel of their etheric nature, you know, as a grounding or warm or cool or even electric, a sense of electrical. And you may sense them by seeing little lights or color flashes or spiral movements out of the corners of your eye. You can't see them with a laser focus, you know, it has to be a soft focus. And you may even hear them by harmonic sounds or tones or music. But once you sense one, you can start talking to them. You think at them, but you have to use your heart, you know. They'll talk back by putting thoughts or feelings into your field, you know, whatever you're working with. When you start to talk to them, you can use your mouth, but feel the words as you say them in your heart and understand them with your mind, you know. And just start with simple questions. So you find a safe environment that you would most likely find the type of nature spirit you're looking to connect with, and then go into a meditative state or just tune in. And in your head, move away from your eyes and ears to the center of your head and get into a receptive state there. And then along a line of light, or use a slide if you like, move your awareness down to the center of your heart. And from your heart, align with the pulse of the universe and realize you're one with all things, and imagine the vertical and horizontal lines of the universal grid running through your heart space. Use a grounding cord to connect your root chakra to the earth, and realize you're a beacon of cosmic and earthly light and love. Just radiate out your brilliance. And when you're ready, just barely open your eyes and use an unfocused or a soft, receptive gaze. And it's difficult to see etheric beings using a laser-like focus, like I said, so keep your gaze really soft. And open your ears, but stay in a receptive mood. If you could do the same with your hearing, kind of being a soft hearing or a receptive mode. And just let the information come to you. Don't send it out laser beam type stuff. Just let the information come to you. And earth fairies can be found in the garden or, you know, wherever there are plants. And their appearance seems to be the densest of all of the nature spirits. So move your gaze to a spot that's about a foot or 18 inches from your direct view and gaze with your eyes. Don't focus. And use that receptive gaze and let your gaze widen to take in a larger area. And then don't think of any one thing. Just appreciate what you're gazing at. Let them, that's a way of communicating with them, appreciate what they do. And don't move your eyes around or try and blink too much. You know, if you're drawn to a specific spot, then turn your gaze to that spot, but gaze and appreciate, see with your heart. And you may sense blotches of color that may not be associated with the plants or the flowers in the area that you're appreciating, but don't move your eyes around. Just kind of just take it all in as a whole, you know, just the whole area. And the more you do this, the better you get at it. You might be able to see at night if you have the Christmas light set up, you know, but start by asking simple questions. You may even just sense them as a grounded feeling, too. Air fairies travel in the force of the wind, but they're also connected with the breath and breathing. So situate yourself, say, under a canopy of a large tree or a covered porch, but near the edge, and looking away from the sun. And take some deep breaths and gently open your eyes to gaze at the sky away from the sun. and you might see little sparkly, swirling energy moving around and all that, but I think that's prana. So let your gaze widen to take in a large area. And don't think of any one thing. Just appreciate what you're gazing at. If there are clouds in the sky, you might see them with white wings made of feathers, and other times they appear dark when traveling in a thunderstorm. But just see with your heart. And they have a high vibration, so it's hard to see the air fairies, the sylphs. However, you might feel them or hear a harmonic sound, so open your hearing in a receptive way to allow the information to come to you. And you might just sense them as a feeling of inspiration or creativity or mental clarity, you know, because they have to do often with your mental state. Water fairies' appearance is more fluid, and they travel in the force of water currents. And you might see them in the ocean at the crest of a wave or center of a curl, or they can even be seen playing in the waterfall. And you can safely, if you can safely meditate in the shallows of the body of water, you know, a body of water, or on the shore near the edge, use the soft gaze and appreciate the push and the pull of the currents or the waves. And you may see faces in the movement of the water, or even fish may come to greet you. You may even hear a distant song or a tone. And they can be alluring, you know. So if you're using rain or a shower, your daily shower, to connect with the undines, you may feel emotions come to the surface. And just let the undines wash away any lower-level emotions and cleanse your energetic field. It's so refreshing. Now, fire fairies can appear in a flash, and they're just so quickly gone. You know, they bring welcoming warmth, but they also destroy, so keep a safe distance. And working with a candle is a lot safer than the form of a fireplace or a campfire, but, you know, fireplaces are just, I don't know, more dramatic and inviting. Using, as I mentioned, it's safety. Think safety, but, you know, you want to get your effects too. You want to communicate, and it seems easier if it's bigger. So to see them, use the soft gaze and widen your gaze to take in a larger area. But you may see sparks or a trail of rainbow iridescences. You may see faces or long, drawn-out, lizard-like bodies in the flames. You may hear words within the hissing noises. So you can feel them in your heart as a passion, or even in your bloodstream or spine. Like awakened kundalini, you can feel that electrical movement, perhaps. And dragon is a salamander. If you ask, they may give you a brief view of a dragon head in the fireplace, or the sun's rays may form it in the clouds for you. Yeah. But a simple exercise that can be used with all of the elementals is to invite one, just one of them at a time anyway, to come and touch a part of your body, like your hand or your face. Just notice the feel of it, and then invite it to touch another part of your body, like your knee or your toe. And then notice, did it feel the same? You know, so, and then you can try a different elemental too. But there's less to be learned through talking to trees and the messages that, you know, maybe to be strong and tall and true to your purpose. The wind's message might be to be flexible and not resist the change. Water's message could be how to yield and flow with life. And the fire may be to burn away or rid yourself of old, rotting energy cluttered in your life. And just as a summary of all of this, of all of the devas, The ancient philosophers believed that the world is a living spiritual being. The world soul is pure spirit diffused throughout all nature, and the spiritual essence embraces and energizes all life in the universe. And it is the sentient factor in substance itself. It's the responsiveness of matter throughout life. It's the web of life, or the body of vitality, which underlies every form and links every part of form with every other part. Eventually, the thinkers of the time created a cleavage between spirit and matter. As the rise of established fundamental religions and sciences grew, the magical world and the mystery of life infused with divine spirit was forgotten, reducing it to a dream belonging only to poets, alchemical symbols, indigenous cultures, and even madmen. The world became an illusion, yet devoid of magic. Humans subjugated their will upon nature and saw the world as something apart from themselves, an object without life. And scientists decided animals had no feelings, and the earth was a big rock floating through space. The men of the church looked only to the heavens for light of the divine spirit, and set themselves up exclusively as mediators between the people in their care and the divine. Fortunately for us, certain people and cultures continued to understand the essence of the world soul as the hidden light in nature, the cosmic fire in the fabric of creation. The essence of our soul is part of the fabric of the universal tapestry of creation. Our inner and outer worlds are not separate in spite of the thinkers of the time. It's within us to evoke real magic in order to creatively participate in transmuting the illusion of separation back into the unity of spirit and matter. The real world is an enchanted place. The soul of the world is waiting for us to connect with our inner powers, those magical powers that belong to matter and to life itself, and to use that creative force as artists and magicians with inner vision to shape prime matter, giving it form. So my hope is that you walk away from this talk with a new perspective of life, that you live consciously in the world, and that you connect with nature's builders to manifest the desires of your soul. Okay, I think I talked enough. So, star two to raise your hands, and if you have a question, you can put it in the box on the web, and I will open up for questions if you have any. I would like one little piece of housekeeping here. I think it was Sandra brought this up, that a lot of you will be traveling on, I think, the 12th, and that's next Wednesday. That's the when I had set up the orientation call for the process. So too many of you are going to be traveling, so I am going to push that out, push it out a week, and we need to do that one next, that call next. So I'm just going to push everything out 1 week. So next Wednesday we will not have the call, and just I hope you all have a great time at the retreat. And then the following Wednesday we'll start in with the orientation call, and then the four creative processes after that, each on a Wednesday. So When is that? Is that next Wednesday is the 12th. I think the following one is the 19th. I could be wrong, but whatever Wednesday that is, that will be our orientation at that point. All right. So I think that's the only thing I needed to say, and that we will open up the phone lines and let's see who we got. Let's see if I can do this now. Okay, Deb, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, great, great.
Thank you for this. My question actually has to do with my space clearing.
Mm-hmm.
My process involves, if I'm actually physically at a space, the way I was taught was to use rice, bring in the fire with 151 rum, and then feng shui powders. I've been adding essential oils that are called in. And so I've been using, instead of the alcohol, I've been using my fire deva and my fire dragon to activate the fire. I'm also now getting that the rice doesn't want to be rice anymore, that I could use, if I'm no longer using the alcohol, I can use something like birdseed. So that would bring in, you know, laying it on the earth, so it would bring in that element. And then if birds take it, they're going to bring it up into the air, so that's the air element. So what I'm asking, is there anything that you get in terms of water that I could use? Because I can't put the fire out, like I can't add water to it, because then that's, you know, it's going to be like a conflict within the mixture. But I just thought I would ask if you got anything, or if there's some, you know, deva that would work with me for me to get it, you know, the information.
Well, if you're... when you're working with your dragon, that's not a physical thing that'll put the fire out, right? You are just working with the concept of the dragon.
That's correct. Correct. But in my, you know, in the elemental train, you know, in the Chinese five elements that kind of has its basis here. For me, you know, and within the Bagua, fire puts out water.
Right.
I mean, water puts out fire.
Right, yeah. It doesn't have to be water itself. It can just be whatever will represent water. I mean, you could throw a fish on there if you wanted to. Not that you want to, but just pick. And really, I would even assume this would be different for every client.
Of course. Thank you.
You know, you could have like a river stone. Even though it's a stone, but if it's from the river, you know what I mean? You know, it doesn't have to be water itself. It can be, I mean, you could even put in there a shower head, because water flows through a shower head, right? But that would be awkward. But just anything that represents water, it doesn't have to be water itself, especially when you have the intention of what it is to represent. And like I said, I would imagine different clients have different needs. And
To honor it and the intention is not to put the fire out. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, having your dragon, even as a totem, you know, it's great, but you don't have to have an actual fire, right? You know, you can have something that, you know, you could have a matchstick even, you know, because it represents fire. But, you know, it's great inviting all of these elemental beings in the etheric, and even letting them help you decide what to use as your symbol, you know.
And I find for that expansion.
Yes, I find them so helpful all the time when I'm working with them. And, you know, you get caught up sometimes and you forget to invite them in, and I'll be frustrated and I'll be just trying to push through stuff. And then they come and gently remind, you know, invite us. We'll help you. Now, we want a party. We want in on this. And
that's
just
so helpful. That's so helpful. Yeah. Like, I had come up with specific oils for specific sections of the Bagua, and I've tossed that out, and I go through and I, you know, buy into it, you know, whatever comes through for the oils that are to be used for that particular client is what I use. So why wouldn't I do the same with the elements? So that's perfect. So thank
right.
you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just ask them. You know, they're sometimes they act like little know-it-alls too, you know, so you have to sometimes tell them, okay, that's enough. Oh, great. Thanks, Deb, for calling in.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And thank
okay.
you for pushing the calls back, too. So appreciate that.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Okay.
Okay. And now we have Montana. It doesn't say, it says cell phone, Montana.
Hi, that's Angie.
Oh, hi, Angie. Montana.
Yes,
I didn't know you were in Montana.
I'm from Montana, so I still have a Montana phone. So my question, so this is like, wow, overwhelming for the fact when you are just, you know, I guess this is a really new introduction for me. I don't know a lot about it. So like what I was wondering, is there, when people are just starting, is there for each specific person, and like for me, is there a specific Deva that wants to work with me, wants me to, you know, concentrate on bringing them around and or doing something?
You know, Angie, your body is a Deva, and it's filled with all sorts of elements. The
okay.
human body has all kinds of elements in it. It has all of the elements. We are the mediating place for all kingdoms in nature. So we have all of the plant, the animal, you know, the mineral within our body. We are
uh-huh.
everything. Okay.
Okay.
But having said that, because they're all around, and you're working with one thing, you invite them in, like Deb, you know. She needed
mm-hmm.
fire, so she invites the dragon in, you know. Whatever it is you need, you invite in. However, yes, there are totems that you may be working with in this phase. And I go through my phases, too. I had dragons in for the longest time, you know. And, you know, and I think they're fading out a little bit more, and I'm not sure what's coming in next, but I can feel the fading out of the dragon. But right now, that what came to me as you were saying that is that the dragon is important to you right now, and it's covering different aspects of what you need. It's like a couple areas that it's helping you with, and
okay.
if you could invite them in more fully, and just whatever it is that you're working on, ask them to help you move through it. You know, and I feel that you have some blocks, and they are helping you with your blocks. I'm feeling two of them, and
okay.
And the dragon, if you think about it, is Kundalini coming up your spine, and it's that electric fire, that earth fire that comes in and initiates you into your next step. And
okay.
and I know you're working with people and relationships, and so
mm-hmm.
that fire also helps with the passion. You have this, I'm seeing like a two-step thing for you. You're working with the emotions, which is more of a watery thing, but you're also working with the passion. So if you're working on a new process or something where you help them with their emotions, stabilizing their emotions, and then bringing it up further into the heart for the passion. and expressing out the passion. So like a two-step process that you may, I don't know if you're working on it or if it's, you know, it's in the future for you, but that is something that you can work with. Work with the water elementals and just having that fluidity, breaking through blocks and even using the dragon to blow through the rotting energy, you know, the stagnant energy, and helping people come into their hearts to radiate out. And, oh gosh, there was something else. You being an initiator, you know, your position of helping people through that is as an initiator. And I think one of the blocks I'm sensing is you have to believe it. You have to believe that's within you to do, you being the initiator. Something like that. You know, that flow, just to help them through their processes, and you directing it, kind of like a managing deva, right?
Right.
Just be the managing deva and just help that whole flow, that process, that energy pattern.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Okay, let me check for questions. Okay, and we have Sandra saying, hi, beautiful animal. Well, thank you, Sandra. Can you please connect with me and see what devas can help with the Reiki attunement process, love and light? Okay. I think, if I recall, Reiki is source energy. I know I've done some healing work with quantum touch where that's earth energy, but actually I prefer working with both and bringing it through the heart that way. It's very evened out. But of course, ground yourself, because you need, working with the Reiki, you need absolute grounding, and I know you know that already. But so before your session, you can invite in a managing deva for your session, and just give the intention of the healing and whatever is highest and best, obviously, for your client. And the Reiki is a deva in itself too, you know. So you just set up beforehand the whole managing deva of your session, and then also connect with the body deva of your client, you know, and just, you know, highest and best. The body deva understands that that it needs to flow the energy where it's needed. And Reiki, I know Reiki does that. It'll flow to where it's needed. And once again, that's the deva working with that too. But, you know, just connect up with that managing deva and the body deva of your client. And then, of course, you can call in the nature spirits to work on blocks that you may pick up. You know, if it's an emotional block, look to the water elementals. And, you know, if there's a mental block, that would be the air and elemental, that sort of thing. If there's a whole channel block, you would call in the fire elementals to help move or clear out the channel for the Reiki to flow. So that's what I'm picking up. You can work like, our body is a deva. You know, you just contact that deva of the person to help with that. So I don't see any more questions. So I just want to thank you all. Thank you all for showing up. And I'm so honored. I feel so supported. And I love you guys all, you know. So thank you so much. And I'll send out an email with the correct new dates and all of that. So if there is, if anybody else can think of, you know, is there another retreat that I'm missing here? I know that there is, some of you are going to the Academy 2 retreat. So if enough of you are going, we can even push that out one more week if it, you know, if it has to be. But in any case, next week will just be it. So thank you all. I am so honored. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you all showing up. So bye-bye for now.